The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is funding new research into how people react to storm warnings. The announcement comes as we mark the first anniversary of Superstorm Sandy, or was it Hurricane Sandy? The wording changed several times throughout the event, and some say that led to confusion and perhaps kept victims in their homes for too long. Here to tell us more about the new grants and also about a report of NOAA's actions during Sandy is Chair of NOAA's Sandy Assessment Team, Peyton Robertson. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first, tell us about these new grants. What sort of research do you expect to fund?
So NOAA has a program called Sea Grant, where we work in cooperation with universities, and in particular the states that were struck by Sandy, and New York and Connecticut in particular, and New Jersey, are going to be the Sea Grant programs that are have put out a request for proposals on a number of different kinds of research that we really think will be helpful to understand how to address the issue you mentioned about how to get people out of harm's way in the future. And in particular, the proposals we anticipate addressing both the nature of the storm hazard information and the kinds of warnings that community and residents are receiving. First of all, what kind of information are they getting? What are the sources and venues of information that they're trusting? That's very important in terms of the confidence that citizens have in the information. What are the factors that determine how they will or will not respond to that information? And then, in particular, we also envision that the topics will address sort of the technology that they use. Are there new ways that people are getting information through mobile devices or other tools that are more effective than not? Any cultural barriers or language barriers that might exist in terms of the effectiveness of the communication? Also seeing how the issue you raised of whether hurricane versus tropical cyclone or the ways that we use different language affect behavior and how social media is working. We found some interesting things during Sandy about things like Facebook and Twitter and how those are on the rise and the way people get information.
Your initial findings seem to show an irony in this all of this because people said, according to your studies, that most people, 84%, trusted the prediction itself that the storm would be dangerous. 90 to 84% said, yeah, this is really bad. So where did the shortfall occur in terms of people's reaction when most of the people believed the forecast and the forecast was correct, and yet they stayed around too long?
Yeah, that's right. You know, what was really interesting is that we found these two studies, one that had been done right at the time that Sandy hit last year by the Wharton School, and then some separate work that was funded during the course of our service assessment. And frankly, it sort of pointed up that people, that a lot of what the speculation was that affected people's behavior perhaps wasn't true, that the distinction between hurricane and tropical storm really wasn't the issue, that in fact many people surveyed thought there was a hurricane coming. So that distinction seemed to be to make less difference. I think what it really uncovered is there's a whole bunch of different things that drive people's behavior. Again, some of this was speculative, but some of it was borne out that there is a latency effect, if you will, that people remember most the last storm they experienced. So having had Irene pass just the year before, you know, it might have affected, and because that actual storm didn't produce the kind of results we anticipated in terms of its severity, that they became more complacent or didn't think the forecast was true. I think, as we'll maybe talk about a little bit here, the thing that I would point up is the real issue out of Sandy, and the one that perhaps is receiving some of the greatest focus, is this issue of storm surge. We really found that people didn't understand what storm surge meant.
I just was going to ask you, what is it?
Well, storm surge is the sort of double whammy you get with the effect of water level of tide, of a high tide, or water levels that rise as a result of the normal tidal cycle. And then on top of that, the water that's driven by wind that emanates from a hurricane and pushes water on top of whatever its current level is according to tide onto land. And we refer to it by a variety of terms. A lot of times we call it coastal flooding. People think of coastal flooding as that we found that sometimes they associate that with just being on the coast. Well, if I don't live on the coast, then I don't really need to worry about that. But in fact, storm surge is a phenomenon where the water rises over the land and pushes inland quite extensively. And so I'm sure you all recall many of the images that were taken of Sandy and the effects on the Jersey and Long Island coast, where water really pushed far inland and flooded homes very, very much several blocks away from the beach.
And isn't it true that storm surges, or the level of surges, or how deep they'll go, that's one of the hardest things to predict relative to predicting rainfall levels or wind levels?
Yeah, that's right, because as storm surge, because it's really dependent on the track of the storm, we have a generally good knowledge of where that track will be. Our forecasting has gotten so much improved with respect to predicting the track, and the prediction of the track of Sandy was quite accurate. But because surge is tied to timing, that is, that tidal issue, is what's the tide going to be when the storm actually arrives? And really, what's the total extent of the wind field? In the case of Sandy, it was such a large hurricane where the wind field was, you know, in the order of 1,000 miles, that water over such a large distance can really stack up. And so then you really can't get down to the more precise level what the surge will be until it actually gets a little closer. And we found that people wanted that information sooner. You know, the emergency managers told us, if you could give us a storm surge forecast more like, you know, 36, 48 hours out, that would really help us plan. You know, the challenge of that is the accuracy of that, is the level of precision you'll get. You'll get a relatively smaller level of confidence that's going to be the actual amount of water.
I guess I'm a little surprised that NOAA and the other weather organizations haven't focused on surges more, because even if you look back as far as the 1900 Galveston hurricane, the problem was the surge that went right up the street and swamped everything, even, you know, up a hill. And so it sounds like maybe that's going to really be the next area for forecasting work.
That's right. And they have the Weather Service, and within NOAA we have the National Ocean Service, which with expertise on tides and water levels and so forth. And both of those parts of NOAA have focused quite a bit of attention on surge over the years. It's some of its technical capacity in terms of computing power that's been increased as a result of the Sandy supplemental funding that was provided after the storm. So we're improving our technical capacity, but it's also the tools that people have available to understand it. And so one of the things that we found, and one of the things the Weather Service and the Ocean Service are working very hard on right now, is improving the way that people get information. And I can tell you from conducting a whole bunch of interviews with a variety of folks, the bottom line people said was, give us the map, so that communicating storm surge in text information by saying water levels of 4 to 8 feet above mean low water in terms like that. Folks don't necessarily understand what that means. If you show people an image on Google Earth or something in a geographic information system that says the water level on your street where you live will be this deep, they have a much better ability to comprehend it.
That's basically taking people by the shoulders and shaking them, it sounds like. We're speaking with Peyton Robertson, chair of NOAA's Sandy Assessment Team. So you do have the Sandy Assessment Team. Can you catch us up to what NOAA has done or any changes implemented in terms of this communication with people in harm's way since a year ago?
Yeah, so a number of things, one of which, as you're reporting today, is this funding that's available to research and really understand from a social science aspect of what is it that drives people's behavior. And that's one of the things that the team had. We're a very technically competent agency. We have incredible tools between satellites and forecasting methods, but really understanding what drives people's behavior is one of the things that the team identified that needs to be addressed. And so that's being done through this research funding to really get at the kinds of things that we should be implementing vis-a-vis communication. But there's a whole array of other things that respond to our findings and recommendations from the service assessment. As I mentioned, there's a set of newly upgraded supercomputers that are more than twice as fast as they were during Sandy. So we'll have the ability to process even more sophisticated computer models and make more accurate forecasts further out in time. There's also other things besides modeling, as I mentioned, on storm surge. And next year, beginning in the 2014 hurricane season, the National Hurricane Center is going to introduce an experimental inundation graphic onto its website. So that'll depict the height of the water above ground from an approaching tropical or post-tropical cyclone and give people that map, so to speak, of how deep it's going to be and where they are in relation to that.
Is there some thought that perhaps notifying people of the surge or where it's going to occur, all of this type of information you've mentioned, is more effective if you deliver it directly through their smart devices and so forth, or even maybe not so smart devices with text messages? versus coming through local authorities that then spread the word themselves.
Yeah, we'll see. I think one of the things that was fascinating to me was the story of a town in New Jersey where they posted a Facebook page, and I can't remember how many followers they had in advance of the storm, but the number of followers during the storm increased dramatically. So that sort of social network of people telling other people what they're seeing is an intriguing way that people get information and trust it. We know this from all kinds of other examples of something happening, some event happening, and all of a sudden the Twitter feeds or the Facebook page connections really light up. And so it may be that people, you know, are, as you suggest, might be most trusting of somebody who says, I live at 4601 Ocean Drive and the water's over my driveway, then they know that that they know who that person is and where they live, and then they understand that that's actually happening.
And just one final note to return to what was, I guess, some of the early criticism of the Weather Service, perhaps of NOAA overall, about the language used, whether it was a post-tropical cyclone or hurricane or whatnot. And is there any thought about changing the actual language when it comes to these emergency messages for the public?
Yeah, there has been. In fact, following Sandy, the National Weather Service made a policy change, and in fact, they had anticipated it before our report was released, but then we released the report and recommended they go ahead and do that. So they've broadened the definitions of hurricane and tropical storm watches and warnings to allow for those watches and warnings to be issued and remain in effect. That is, after a hurricane has technically become something else, like a tropical storm, but people have been preparing and might be confused if we call the storm something else, then the National Hurricane Center can continue to issue tropical related products and services as opposed to changing the names and potentially confusing folks.
Peyton Robertson is chair of NOAA's Sandy Assessment Team and director of NOAA's Chesapeake Bay office. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.